This is Brittany Blackwell, host of the Resilient Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, along with this podcast. Each show on the network is independently owned, and the views expressed may not represent those of other podcasts. For the best education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Steve Simmons, who, along with his son Cliff, created the children's book, Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night? Excellent story, fun to read, beautifully illustrated by Ruth Harper. You will love reading to your child. Before you go, it'd be so cool if you took time to help out the podcast. And I got a couple of ways you could do that. One, you could tell a friend and share the links. Two, you could go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. And three, how about click on the link on my website homepage that says, Buy Me a Coffee. You click there and you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. Thanks so much. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
You know, our thought in writing it was that, one, it would provide children with an opportunity to really appreciate the environment, in this case, the ocean environment and the creatures in it. And looking at Ruth's beautiful illustrations, hearing about the ocean creatures, and each creature, by the way, On the one side, we talk a little bit about their activities. And then on the other side, we talk about their, what their sleep habit is. So people, you know, children will learn both things, which we thought would be an interesting message.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Stephen J. Simmons has been a professor of law and government, a White House aide on domestic policy, and a leader in the cable industry. Stephen is the author of Where Do Creatures Sleep at Night? And the best-selling Alice and Greta, A Tale of Two Witches, and co-author of Where Do Big Creatures Sleep at Night? Clifford R. Simmons' lifelong passion for writing and love for his nieces and nephews fuels his enthusiasm for children's books and co-authorship with his father, Stephen. Cliff formerly worked at Google and now runs his own business. He is the co-author of Where Do Big Creatures Sleep at Night? Ruthie Harper is a self-taught artist from England. She loves to echo nature in her work. She lives in Iowa with an adorable husband. They have six grown-up kids between them, plus handfuls of grandbabies. She's the illustrator of the New York Times bestseller The Kissing Hand with Nancy M. Leek. Happy Mamas, Where Do Creatures Sleep at Night? And Where Do Big Creatures Sleep at Night? Our focus today will be Steve's children's book called Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night? Steve, thanks so much for being on the show, and say hi to everyone.
Steve, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, glad to have you here. Your book looks awesome. I love this. It's such a cool, it has a good feel, good paper, and just the colors and the caricatures as well as the story. So I love it. And what I got to ask you when we start this is, where'd your interest or inspiration to write and create children's books come from?
Well, I would say my mother, when I was very young, would tell my brother Andy and I about a magical Mrs. Blueberry, who was a babysitter who would come and sit with three children, and she was dressed in blue from shoes to hat and had a blue umbrella and would take them on adventures. And we would anxiously await every night the new episode of Mrs. Blueberry. And I think that sparked it initially. And then when I had my five children, I would read to them almost every night. So I'd be running between bedrooms trying to read one book to the other. And I think that also sparked my interest in writing these books. So this is my eighth children's book, Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night? In fact, you may ask me later, but I'll say it now, all eight of them are featured on our website, SimmonsBooks.com. SimmonsBooks.com, and we also have a Instagram account at Simmons Stories, which talks about this particular book.
Very cool, and yes, a little bit later we'll mention it again, so that because I'll put all that information in the show notes, so it's easy for them to find. So good stuff. Right. I want to make sure that I say this. I mean, you have several children's books, just like you said. One of the things I got to ask is, what a cool subject you have here. This book we're talking about, where do ocean creatures sleep at night? And, you know, we have this ongoing little thought here about where creatures sleep at night, where big creatures sleep at night as well. And, what a cool subject. I mean, and definitely a question that a parent might find their child asking them at some point when they're watching like an elephant just stand out there or maybe watching a cow doing what they do or maybe, you know, fishing or watching a sea turtle or something. Where do they sleep at night? I mean, what I love about this is that, talk about having a focus on where creatures sleep is definitely something a child would ask you. Did that come out of a child's question or something, or is it just something you guys thought of?
It's a great question you're asking. And it started actually with at our house in the Northeast. And I started, looking around the yard, and I'd see butterflies and bumblebees and squirrels and rabbits. And, the thought occurred to me about 6 or 7 years ago that, I'd written previous children's books, and I thought, wow, what a great subject it would be for children to find out where all these creatures they see during the day when the children go to sleep. Where do they sleep? What do they do? How do they rest? So out of that came Where Do Creatures Sleep at Night? And my publisher, Charles Bridge, liked the idea. We were lucky to find the spectacular illustrator, Ruth Harper, who we can talk about. And that was published several years ago. And then my son, Cliff, had been so creative with suggestions on the first book, and they're particularly challenging as a writer because they're rhyming. So I said, Cliff, join me in the second book. And that was Where Do Big Creatures Sleep at Night? So the same theme and concept came for where does an elephant sleep, or a giraffe, or a crocodile? Where do they sleep at night? And then finally, that came out a year or so ago. And the next evolution, an idea we came up with, was ocean creatures. And Cliff and I love the ocean. We've snorkeled together in the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. We've snorkeled in the Caribbean. We love to kind of go to aquariums. We love the ocean itself and body surfing, occasionally board surfing. So this was a topic very close to us. And that's where the idea, where do ocean creatures sleep at night? And how in the world does an octopus sleep, or a dolphin, or a whale? So it was a very interesting exercise for us.
I can imagine. I mean, that's one of those things that it is a good question. It's like, you think about, especially just mentioned an octopus, and I've seen shows about octopus or octopi, however you say it. And it's a cool thing to think about and actually to find out those answers. And so one of the things I got to mention is that at the end of your book, you actually have a nice little concluding thing, like the parents bringing it to an end and the child starting to get sleepy and time to go to bed. But you actually have a statement on the last page about the importance of sleep. I was wondering why, what made you wanted to make sure that you included something like that.
Exactly. And the note says sleep is, and this is a note from the authors, and I'll just read it. Sleep is important for all children. Sleeping gives you the energy you need to grow, learn, laugh, and play. Just as the ocean creatures in this book need sleep to be at their best, so do you. And our thought was that it would be great for children to know and do the comparison that just as a whale or a sea otter or a walrus need to sleep and rest, so their next day they're going to have the energy to carry on. The children need that too. And I thought having a mother or father or sibling read this to the child, or the child reading itself, if they can read it, would be an interesting and an important message.
Well, it's a neat message, and especially very cool, because after having that conversation, reading the words and talking about the creatures sleeping, then suddenly there's not suddenly, then it comes to a natural conclusion, which is, you know,
exactly.
It's time for you to sleep. Yeah.
Thank you.
I like that. What's that?
Hope, I was just going to say, in terms of messages for the book, you know, our thought in writing it was that, one, it would provide children with an opportunity to really appreciate the environment, in this case, the ocean environment and the creatures in it, and looking at Root's beautiful illustrations, hearing about the ocean creatures. And each creature, by the way, we on the one side, we talk a little bit about their activities. And then on the other side, we talk about their, you know, what their sleep habit is. So people, you know, will learn, children will learn, you know, both things, which we thought would be an interesting message. So for example, take a walrus. A walrus has tusks that are long and white. If it had to brush them, that would be quite a sight. It uses its tusks to climb on the ice and to push away others if they're not acting nice. So that's a little bit of, you know, it's not too much activity, but it talks about how they use their tusks and so forth. And then we go on to the sleep part. A walrus can go for days without rest, but then it must sleep to be at its best. It snoozes on land most of the time, but can rest while it's floating. Either is fine. So there's a little bit, and there's more in the different creatures, but there's a little bit about what something about the creature, its activities or its physical characteristics, and then its sleep habit. So we thought that would be interesting to children and increase their appreciation of the environment. And secondly, we thought it would be a great, you know, nighttime story for, as I said, parents or siblings or anyone to cuddle up with their, you know, child and read them a book. So.
Well, I love it. And one of the things that I really like is that it flows. All right. So it's, you know, it for anyone who's ever been a parent and read to a child, one of the worst things is if you run into something that's just too cumbersome or it's clunky or it has just incredible passages that are like, who are they writing this for? And yours is nothing like that. Instead, it has this nice rhyming and it has a nice use of words that create this picture and image. And then you have the very nice drawings and pictures of the creatures. But is there something that you do to practice to make it that way, that it is, has that nice flow? Because that's a thing. I've run into books where you're like, okay, let's find another one. You know, it's like, you see the mannerisms of your child.
Steve, that's a great insight. And when I was talking to the publishers about this book and the series, I said, look, I don't want this to be, you know, a heavy duty science book. This is for young kids. It's got a flow. They've got to want to turn the page to see the next creature and read about it. And we'd like to do some simple rhyming for the kids so they, you know, they can hear what rhyming sounds like and feels like, and they can read about these things. And as I said, have others read to them about these things. So it was a very deliberate choice to do it the way we did it and not to use, you know, some words you want to push kids a little bit, so you'll find a few here and there, but generally you don't want to make it ponderous so kids really don't know what you're talking about. You want to make the reading of the book fun for the child, and I think that's what this does.
Very much so, very much so, and I love it. And what goes right along with your writing are the pictures. So talk a little bit about Ruth. I mean, how'd this work out in trying to collaborate together to make your ideas come to life?
Well, when I began the series, I went down to a bookstore, as I've done before, and I looked through, you know, 50 different picture books, and I went online, excuse me, and I said, here are the 5 illustrators that if we could get them would be great. And Ruth was at the top of the list.
Nice.
And Charles Bridge through their great efforts, was able to work out an arrangement with Ruth. She liked the story. She liked the concept. And, you know, I had found that in her prior work, she really did a great job of illustrating nature and animals. So it was just perfect. And, you know, the way this works is that we send the text through the publisher to Ruth. And then Ruth takes that and does some, you know, charcoal drawings, some original sketches. And then we look at them and we'll make some suggestions that maybe this isn't quite right and that, and do it here, a little bit of there, and how it could relate to the text better. You know, in her case, there's very little of that because she's so good, but you do some. And then she comes back and she'll take that and she'll actually do a color. And even there, you know, on just a couple of pages, maybe we'll say, well, this doesn't quite work. And she was good enough to be able to, even on one or two of those pages, change it to reflect it. And she's so good and she's so talented that, you know, we were just all thrilled with what she did. And so, yeah, Ruth Harper's the best.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And I mean, one of my favorite creatures of the sea are sea turtles. And
yeah,
this almost looks like the, yeah, it's like a picture almost. So, I mean, good stuff. I love that. The all right. So now you wrote this book with your son, Cliff. So, what's that like writing as a team?
Well, first of all, as a parent, it's an extraordinary experience. Here's this 32-year-old son, 31, I guess, when he wrote this. He just turned 32, and you know, you remember the days when he was 3, 4, 5 years old and you 6, you were reading him books. And now all of a sudden, here he is writing a book with you and coming up with creative solutions you didn't think of and rhyming you didn't think of. So it was, for both of us, I think, a terrific experience. And, you know, something people probably don't know about picture books is that it seems simple, but I know my first book, Alice and Greta, I had something like 25 drafts of it, you know, between editorial and all the rest. And I'd read it to children. And these books too, we read the drafts to children in classrooms just to get their feedback. But we do many, many, many drafts. And Cliff and I did that. We divided up the animals who did what. Then he'd send me his draft. I'd send him my draft. He'd make corrections. We'd have, we were together too a lot, but at the time also we had a lot of Zoom calls where we'd spend hours going over this, what rhymes, what doesn't rhyme. So it was, on the one hand, an extraordinary feeling to be able to do this work with your child, who's now all grown up. And secondly, it was a great collaborative effort. And I think both of us put all of our energy into it, and I think it turned out terrifically well.
That it did. I have my oldest is 30, and I have a 26-year-old as well, getting ready to be 27. Yeah. And
good for you.
Thanks. And as you're talking there, I was just thinking about, because as I was reading, I did the same thing, which is remembering the days that I'm reading to them. And you right. know, one of the things that I always looked for in a book is that, and I loved it when the kids chose these books that allowed you to either make sound effects or point out some of the stuff that was going on. And you definitely allow for that in what you do and your descriptions and such. And, you know, everything from, you know, just the way they behave, you know, like one refers to it dancing.
That's right. Clownfish. Exactly.
Yes. And I just like the fact, sorry, you're throwing me seriously down memory lane here. And I'm pretty sure I'll be getting together with my kids this weekend. So I'll have to see if they let me read to them.
That's fun. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, some of the habits of the creatures are like a parrotfish. So I'll just read this quickly. A parrotfish has colors that are very bright. Turquoise, red, green, and even some white. Its teeth are shaped like a parrot's beak, and that's why its name is so unique. So that's kind of a description of the fish. And then it goes on to the sleep. A parrotfish sleeps in a mucus cocoon that it makes to keep safe in its own gooey room. A very interesting sleep thing there. So going on. So it's fun to, you know, discover things like that. And we go out snorkeling and see parrotfish all the time. So
that's awesome. Love it. It's so cool. That's, you know, and it, I love, like I said, I love books that allow for some interaction as you're reading. Why do you think, what are your thoughts about why it's important for a parent to read to their child?
Well, I think that reading and the love of reading and the ability to read is central to the continuing education and development of a child's mind. You know, you read some of the numbers today about the performance of third graders on these national reading tests, and it's quite sad. So the percentages indicate that a large percentage of young people don't read up to grade level. And, you know, it varies by place to place, but generally there needs to be a lot of improvement. And I think we can't just leave that to the schools. It's also important that when children are at home, that reading continues. So reading is the basis really for future education. If you can't read, you're not going to understand other topics in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. If you can't read, you're not going to understand science. You're not going to understand history. You're obviously not going to do well in English. So, and this goes forward after you graduate high school. If you want to go to college, obviously you got to read. If you want in most jobs, you got to read well. So I think one of the most important functions of parents, in addition to showing their child unconditional love and all the rest of the things we could have another discussion on, but is really the ability and love of reading. So, and that's one of the things I hope books like ours will do.
Oh, I think so. I think it will. I like that. Very nice. I got to ask you just a kind of a writing question here. So something that I pointed out at the beginning is that your book has a nice flow and it has a nice rhyme and it works. And how do you go about writing a children's book? Because do you lay it out like an outline, or do you put up pictures, little hand drawings? I mean, how are you kind of formatting the idea that, you know, what it's going to look like to help you give it that flow and make it?
It's a great question. Well, first of all, picture books, ones I've worked on, are, because of how they're bound, are 32 pages. So you've got a limit on the length of the book. And that kind of determines, for example, in our case, the number of animals we could talk about and the layouts. So you kind of begin by that. Then in our case, with Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night, we had to decide which creatures we wanted. So we had a long list, and it was kind of a combination of creatures that had some interesting habits and how they slept, as well as ones that are visually interesting. And some of them that we just personally liked and had, you know, had a real interest in. So that's kind of how we broke it down from the 32 pages to the number of creatures to which creatures. And then in terms of the flow, we kind of just plotted out, you know, which creatures we felt would be great to be at the beginning, which at the end. And then we also thought, and all of the three books about creatures kind of begin at the beginning with pictures of children, you know, in the first spread, kind of doing things and talking generally about the book, about what's going to happen and about creatures, and then ends at the end. In this book, for example, with beautiful pictures, it says, children like you also get wet in puddles and rain, or your bath, don't forget. You may go to the beach, a pond, or a pool. Be sure to play safely while you stay cool. Then when it's time to rest your head, you can go to sleep in your nice, dry bed. And in that last illustration where the child is in bed, Ruth Harper has so brilliantly put every single creature that has appeared in the book in the picture. The pillow has clownfish on it. He's got a blanket with parrotfish. He's got a wall with whales on it. And you can see seahorses on his lamp. So a walrus doll kind of thing. So it's really quite interesting. So I think the layout is determined by the opening two pages, then those back two pages I just read, and then the creatures that are in the middle, and one just flows to the other.
I love it. That is awesome. Well, you know, Steve, as we're getting close to finishing up, let's remind everybody about where they can find your website and where they can reach out to contact you guys.
Well, thank you. The website is Simmons, spelled S-I-M-M-O-N-S, SimmonsBooks.com. SimmonsBooks.com. You can go there to see all eight books in this book, Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night? And you can also message us there. There's a place to do that. Contact us. And then there's a Instagram account called Simmons Stories, at Simmons Stories, where you can follow comments about these books and interesting facts. And then, of course, SimmonsBooks.com will lead you there, but they can be purchased on Amazon, or Barnes & Noble, their websites. And we hope people will do that. We hope, you know, libraries and teachers will like this book, science teachers, English teachers. It should be fun for children that are, you know, anywhere from 2 to 8 years old, really, and then some, you know.
Love it. And I agree with you. I think that'd be awesome. Awesome. Children find it very entertaining as well as the parent. And what a great way to spend time with each other. Right. So love that.
Parents will learn things too, as we did about these different creatures.
Oh, very much so. Because we didn't have time to talk about the otters, but the otters, I mean, they're also, I mean, all of them are fun. So good stuff there. The, you know, one of the things that as we're finishing up, I got to ask you this. Do you have a favorite children's book that you remember from when you were a child that just always kind of impacted you?
Yeah, my mother used to read me Babar, King of the Jungle. So I can still remember that. Whenever I see a Babar book or poster, there have been many since then, of course, but it brings back those warm feelings of when I was a child.
Nice. Like that.
Yeah.
One last question for you, and it goes like this. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it? What would you say to say thank you?
That's a great question. And I was very lucky to attend public schools that were just superb, where teachers cared about the children. They were excellent. At my elementary school, there was a teacher in third grade named Miss Gordon, who was terrific in helping me in a variety of ways. In sixth grade, there was a teacher named Mr. Visco, who said I could do better. I really had it in me. I just needed to work harder. And he said he was at first not going to, but decided I had the potential and recommended me into the honors program in high school. And, you know, that was really a tremendous thing that happened. And I did well and then went on to college and so forth. So, you know, what a noble profession to be a teacher, wow, or a school librarian. These are noble professions. And all of us who have gone through school owe them our greatest thanks.
Thank you so much. And Steve, thank you so much for sharing your children's book, Where Do Ocean Creatures Sleep at Night? What a cool story and what a beautiful book. Wishing you the best in all you do.
Steve, thank you so much. Take care.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmileto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.